For the News and Observer, I'm Kyle Ingram, politics reporter and host of Under the Dome for this latest episode for the week of April 1st, 2024. Filling in for your usual host, Don Vaughn, our Capitol Bureau chief here. Today, I'm joined by my colleagues on the politics team. That's DC correspondent Danielle Battaglia and politics reporter Abhi Bajpai. I want to start off today with this leadership change that's happening now at the North Carolina Republican Party. So we knew for a while that the current chair, Michael Whatley, was going to leave to head the RNC, but that means someone here was going to have to take his place. So it seems like there was an election that happened this week. Danielle, you were pretty tuned in for that. What happened?
You were just as tuned in, but it was interesting. So I believe it was, what was it, Tuesday night. Yeah. They held their election. And, I was talking to people who were inside the event. This was obviously closed. I shouldn't say obviously, because I have no idea why it was closed to the public, but it was a closed meeting. So members of the executive committee and members of the General Assembly were allowed to attend. I heard it was a huge turnout for the General Assembly, more so than we usually see at these meetings. And basically, they went through nominations. There were three nominees. One of them immediately dropped out, leaving Jason Simmons. And why am I forgetting? Oh, Jim Womack was the other one. And it came down to Jason Simmons taking the lead. And he is our new, not executive chair. He's our new chair of the Republican Party.
Yeah. So but previously served as executive director for a while. He was the pick of Donald Trump to lead the party. Donald Trump endorsed him on Truth Social, getting very involved in North Carolina politics recently with endorsing Whatley to lead the RNC. But it wasn't a sweeping victory, was it, Danielle?
No, there was a lot of tension because a lot of people saw this as, I don't think coup is the right word, but basically they saw that former President Trump had basically selected Michael Whatley to take over the RNC. He also selected his daughter-in-law, Laura Trump, who's also from North Carolina, to help lead the RNC. And Chris LeCivita, who is from North Carolina, who actually, he's at least worked on North Carolina campaigns. I shouldn't say he's from North Carolina. I believe he lives in Virginia right now. So a lot of North Carolina people now leading the RNC at Trump's will. And then he got involved in North Carolina's own state party election, picking Jason Simmons, and people didn't like that he was involved. Although I was talking with people, what was really interesting talking with people on Twitter the night of was you couldn't tell who was pro-Trump, who was anti-Trump, who was pro-Jason, who was anti-Jason. Like, they kind of all blended together in this weird vortex of what they wanted and what they didn't want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we tend to get a lot of political attention in election years here in North Carolina. We're an allegedly purple state. But why now all of these North Carolina connections to the Republican Party? Well, what's the strategy here?
Well, for as long as I can remember, Michael Whatley has been close to, I was going to say John Hardister because we're working on breaking news as we're talking about this, but Michael Whatley has been close with President Trump. And so there has always been rumors that Whatley would get a cabinet position or something if Trump won. And so for me, this wasn't that surprising of a move. Whatley's also been somebody who has helped spread the 2020 election fraud lies, saying that Donald Trump had won over President Biden. And so I think there's a lot to that, as well as picking people who are going to help advance Trump's cause. And Michael Whatley's been known to be one of those people.
The Senate's opponent, Jim Womack, leads an election integrity so-called group here in North Carolina. I believe he was involved in that massive elections bill, SB 747, or his organization at least. A lot of focus on that lately, but it's not... Go ahead.
I was going to say also confusing with that blurring of the lines of who's who and how they all relate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it's not just the Republicans taking an interest in North Carolina. We had a visit from President Biden this past week, or as you're listening to this, the week before, who came to Raleigh.
And Vice President Harris.
And Vice President Harris, yeah. They came to talk about healthcare. And they've also noted an interest in focusing on North Carolina for 2024. Is that right?
That is right. Since May of last year, Biden's campaign has wanted to focus on North Carolina as one of the battleground states that they need to really hone in on to push the message out to vote for Democrats. When Biden lost in 2020 to President Trump in North Carolina's election, he only lost by 1.3%, which is a very narrow
victory. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you.
Right.
And so, you know, this is a state that they feel that they could win. Now, what's interesting on that is that a Democrat has only won once since 1976, and that was President Obama in 2008. And so, like, we are considered a purple state and a battleground state, but really we often go with Republican presidential candidates.
We should mention, I mean, we've had some really, really close election results. You know, I'm thinking of the state Supreme Court seat, 2020, if I'm not mistaken.
Paul Newby and Sherry Beasley.
Yeah. The attorney general's race in 2020, Josh Stein, Jim O'Neill, of I think about 14,000 vote margin. And then, of course, the one just above 1% margin between Trump and Biden. So, I mean, I think that's something interesting for me when I look at this. I think Republicans argue that the ship has kind of sailed for Democrats and that there's just too much of a, advantage for Republicans in terms of the electorate. But I think these results show that, you know, I think the Democrats have been saying the earlier they make investments, the more it's going to pay off. And I think that's been what they've been really hammering that point home and saying this is not sort of like a last minute decision to pay attention to North Carolina. This is something that they're focusing on well over, you know, for the past year. Leading up to November. So it's going to be, you know, I think our colleague Dawn had a story a couple of weeks ago where she spoke with Morgan Jackson, one of these important consultants, Democratic consultants, and he was saying he would be surprised if you didn't see like a Democratic, principal, someone notable figure coming down to the state almost like every week or so.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're just going to see more and more of that between now and the fall.
And we in Raleigh love when that blocks all of the roads and makes our commute homes a little bit more difficult. But and something that I've heard Republicans say recently even is like North Carolina is a red state that is pretending to be purple. But if you look at the voter registration statistics here, the largest category, which we've made a lot of, is unaffiliated. But that doesn't necessarily mean that these people are swing voters. Usually unaffiliated people have a party that they typically go to, but don't want to be identified with one. So it's not so much a game of trying to get someone over to your side as it is to trying to get people to the polls. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about Biden, plus some changes or a recount and election protests that went on with a state house seat here, and then we'll get to our picks for headliners of the week. You're listening to Under the Dome. I'm politics reporter Kyle Ingram, here today with my colleagues on the politics team, Avi Bajpai and Danielle Battaglia. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about Biden's most recent visit to North Carolina last week, where he talked about healthcare, but we expect probably going to get some more presidential visits in here before the general election in November. What sorts of issues are going to be talked about on these visits, do y'all think?
Well, I would just say, you know, it's interesting. I think for Democrats, they want to really hammer Republicans on healthcare, like we just saw this past week. They're going to make this point that Republicans have not shown a sort of credible healthcare policy or proposal over the last several years. And a long time ago, in relative terms, there was a lot of talk about repealing and replacing Obamacare. And this past week was sort of like this triumphant celebration among Democrats about with the anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. So, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see Democrats really hammer home the position issue of healthcare, which lots of people, it's very important to them, affordability and access to healthcare. But I think it's going to be, I'm curious to hear what you guys think, but it's going to be really, you know, interesting to see how the two parties, both campaigns, message on the economy, because Republicans have been hammering this point home for, you know, basically since Biden took office about cost of living, affordability, inflation. But just this past week, I think the Biden campaign was attacking Trump's sort of Trump's fondness for tariffs a little bit and saying that, you know, that's just going to boost, it's just going to skyrocket prices for consumers. So between healthcare, the economy, affordability, those issues, and then, of course, immigration is the other big issue that, you know, immigration and the situation at the southern border, I think it's just, you know, we have to wait and see what how both campaigns will message on that and how it's going to affect down ballot races, too.
Yeah. I mean, this is the first general election we'll see in North Carolina since the state enacted its 12-week ban on abortion. And we're still really unsure of what the electoral consequences of that will be. Is it that the base of the Republican Party is motivated by what they see as a win to come out and support the candidates that made this happen or that supported this change? Or is it going to negatively affect them and that it makes the Democrats come out to say, we don't want this anymore?
Yeah, is it?
You have Robinson even saying he'll go even further with it. And how does that motivate the base? And how does that hurt other Republicans on the ballot or help them?
But at the same time, there's, you know, this talk about, is Robinson, are some of the other candidates at the top of the ticket, are they going to talk a little less about abortion and not make it sort of a key issue and talk consistently about how they want to go further? And I think that's something that remains to be seen with Trump, too. I don't know that there's necessarily that we have like a clear example right now or a clear record of how Trump at the top of the ticket across the country, he's going to, for him, that he wants to, rise every other candidate down ballot. And I think I don't know if Republicans have figured out what exactly the right chord is to strike on abortion, because you're dealing with so many different specific situations across the country. It might help in one part of the country, it might hurt somewhere else. And I don't know. I don't know if they figured out how it's going to work here in North Carolina.
Well, that'll be interesting to see. Switching gears a little, if we get a little bit more local, let's talk about this saga that's been going on with a House race, a Democratic primary. We didn't see a lot of those, but there was a Democratic primary with a longtime, I believe, 10-term Democratic representative, Michael Ray, got primaried by a progressive challenger. Ray, of course, had broken ranks a few times to vote with the Republicans on some major legislation like the state budget, which had some conservative policy in it. And it seems now, after several election protests and a recount several weeks since the primary election, that he has lost by a very, very small margin. What does this mean for moderates in the House?
Yeah, I mean, we've been following this, not just Representative Ray, his race, but also Representative Cecil Brockman over in Guilford County and some other candidates who were facing challengers. And we had a story on this a few weeks ago. But, you know, I think this is something that is going to continue to play out. It's not, by no means is it sort of like settled and done with right now. It's going to continue this sort of broad issue about different factions within the Democratic Party. And, you know, it's not just the Democrats who have this going on, because you see it at the grassroots level with Republicans too a little bit. But, you know, as we have a session coming up in a couple of weeks, but, you know, later into this year, as we get closer to the election and then next year as well, I think this is not going away as an issue for Democrats. They're going to have to contend with this because, the caucus is interested in staying sort of unified and voting together. But of course, when you're in the minority, you're going to have a few members who, you know, break ranks and make this argument that they want to, you know, their argument is they want to deliver, they have to deliver resources and, you know, benefits for their constituents. And, you know, a lot of these districts you're talking about, disadvantaged communities, poor communities. So I don't know that this is based on the reporting that we've done. Some of our other, you know, colleagues in the press corps have done. This will have ramifications going forward.
Yeah. Well, eager to see how that plays out in the short session, if we get to see a continuation of that dynamic, or if the Democrats sort of strengthen their hold on the party, or perhaps, you know, we have some legislators like Representative Ray who aren't coming back for another term. So maybe there's less to lose with voting Republicans more. So we're going to wrap up on that, but I want to hear everyone's headliners of the week. Let's start with you, Danielle.
I'm so excited. So this is like peak North Carolina. So at the North Wilkesboro Speedway, there was a sinkhole, which is like my first peak North Carolina, because you guys are known for sinkholes. And then in the sinkhole, they found this huge, massive moonshine cave in it. And like also peak North Carolina. And I have so many questions about who was running this like moonshine cave. What was down there? Is there still moonshine in it? Were there like bootleggers running this out of the speedway years ago? I have so like people, I need a reporter on this immediately.
Moonshine Cave is a great headline. Have you ever tried moonshine before?
I have not. I cannot drink because of my heart condition, but I've seen people drink moonshine. The legal one, not the illegal kind.
Yeah.
I tried.
It looked very potent.
I tried the legal kind. Just a little bit of like an apple cinnamon legal kind, and it's still quite a kick.
I've heard that.
Yeah. What about you, Avi? What's your headliner?
I'm going to go with Representative John Hardister, something that Danielle mentioned, referenced earlier in the podcast because it broke literally as we were recording, getting ready to record. But Representative Hardister, who used to serve as the whip for Republicans in the House, was a very, you know, powerful, influential member of the caucus, announced that he is resigning from his seat, leaving the General Assembly, I believe, effective April 8th, which is coming up.
That's what it said. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he had, of course, had run for labor commissioner, didn't win the race, and is choosing not to finish out the rest of his term. We're going to end it several months early.
Yeah.
So the Guilford County, I believe, GOP will nominate someone to fill his seat. So Republicans will be keeping that supermajority, but definitely some unexpected news.
Right.
When did you guys go back to session?
That would be around the end of next month, around the end of April.
24th?
Something like that.
Or around the 24th.
A couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, my headliner of the week. This week, I've been really craving a restaurant that until very recently we had right here by the News and Observer offices on Fayetteville Street. Happy and Hale. It's a chain. And to my despair and that of many of my coworkers here in the newsroom, they announced with almost no notice that they were shutting down their location here at City Plaza for reasons unknown. So now our lunch options here in downtown are severely limited. So
am I right that this announcement came? Were you here for that announcement?
I was here for the announcement. Okay. Breaking news. Yeah. No more Happy and Hale.
Yeah. Womp womp.
So feel free to send any lunch recommendations my way to fill that hole that Happy and Hale has left. Well, that's all for us today. Thank you for listening. And let's come back to us next week. Dawn Vaughn will be back. But for the News and Observer, I'm Kyle Ingram. Thank you for listening.
For more from our politics team, subscribe to the News and Observer at newsobserver.com/subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at Under the Dome and NC Insider, and sign up for our weekly political newsletter, also called Under the Dome, at newsobserver.com/newsletters. Thanks for listening.